On the Other Hand by Braver Angels, Arkansas.
Hello, and welcome to On the Other Hand, in which we seek to explore politics and other issues of importance to our community here in Central Arkansas through conversations with various community leaders. I'm your host, Glenn White, here with my co-host, April Chatham Carpenter. On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas, part of a national organization that aims to reduce political polarization by promoting honest but respectful dialogue among people of all political beliefs. Our progress as a community and country, we believe, requires that we actively seek common ground with the other side so that we can solve problems, basically. So stay tuned for today's conversation as we learn how community leaders in Central Arkansas are helping work towards solutions. April, who do we have today?
Glenn, our guest for today is Ryan Norris, and Ryan works with Americans for Prosperity in Arkansas. And for those people who don't know, Americans for Prosperity is a national organization that advocates for free market solutions to solve community problems. And they have different chapters, or I guess maybe they don't call them chapters. We'll find out that shortly, in states. And so we're going to get to talk with Ryan about his work in Arkansas on behalf of that organization and also how his organization has moved towards more of an emphasis on working together with others across the political divide, trying to find, you know, issues of common interest and ways of solving them in nonpartisan ways. And Glenn, I know that you, as a more liberal-leaning person, and I, as a more conservative person, had differing reactions to meeting Ryan initially. Our own political backgrounds kind of led us to those reactions. And of course, the history of Americans for Prosperity, I think, created some pause for you, since it's been an influential conservative organization. That didn't bother me as a conservative, but Glenn, that wasn't true for you, was it?
That's right. It was not true. And so, Ryan, I'm going to tell a story on myself here. Well, I remember the time when I got the first email from you. I think it was sometime in late 2020. You sent the email saying you're with Americans for Prosperity in Arkansas, and immediately the radar went off, you know, for me. But you said you were interested in seeing how your organization could partner with Braver Angels here in Arkansas because you supported the idea of working together across political divides. Well, of course, that's what we're about. However, I admit I had a little bit of a worrying reaction at first because of my history as a blue and what I had heard about your organization nationally. I saw it in a somewhat critical light. I even began to worry, okay, could there be some bad influence from this? Maybe with my political views, but that's not really the goal here, and that wasn't my worry. My worry mainly was the goals of Braver Angels. Well, I thought about it some. I talked with folks, and I came to realize, and I kind of knew this along, but it took me a while to convince that I need to practice what I preach, you know? I'm telling people we need to listen to the other side. And I said, yep, I need to give this guy the benefit of the doubt. So I checked around also at this time with some of my blue contacts in the state, and I heard very positive things from several of them about how you and the Arkansas group were working in positive ways across the aisle. So that was really encouraging to hear that. And then the kicker, really, I found an article in the Wall Street Journal that your co-founder, Charles Koch, had written, and in that article, he talked about how he had come to realize that maybe they needed to, as an organization, to work better with people with different viewpoints if we're going to get our problems in this country adequately addressed. So that's kind of my story about, you know, the first interaction we had. It turned out to be, I think for me, a real important lesson and probably what is the journey of a lot of people toward depolarization. That's not your first instinct. So it reminds me of the value of taking risks to reach out to others who have different beliefs than we do. I think it's pretty clear we won't always agree, but I do believe that each side has important contributions to make in addressing our problems and in crafting effective solution. So that's my story I'm telling on myself. So April, let's go ahead and get started and hear from Ryan now.
Oh, that's great. Thanks for your honesty, Glenn, on that. I appreciate that. And I know that's one of the things we want to get across on this show is that, you know, we aren't always perfect in the way that we approach something initially, but we are willing to be curious and let curiosity kind of win the day here. So, Ryan, I know that the stories of a person, you know, getting to know the stories of a person and how they get to something becomes something that's very important for us to know. And so I'd love to hear about how you got to what you're doing today.
Okay. Well, you know, there's the boring version, and we can talk about where I've worked and all those kind of things. But really, if you want to know my view on how I've arrived at where I'm at today, which I am probably more self-actualized than I've ever been in my life in the role that I'm doing now. And that journey began with just a natural curiosity that I have about the lives of other people, and that I like people, and I like people that are different than me, because I was actually a big fan, still am, of Henry David Thoreau. And he wrote Walden. In a piece of Walden, he talks about, hey, I'm going to live this life and I'm going to go live another one, because, you know, there's only so many, you know, so much of me to go around, and there's so many things out there to view. And so therefore, in lieu of being able to go live a different life, I like to have conversations with people to understand how they've arrived at where they've arrived at, and what experiences have shaped them and their worldviews and all that. So that's kind of just a natural component of how I've arrived at where I'm at. I have a high level of openness in my personality. I'm not overly defensive when I hear other people's points of view. I'm open-minded to the possibilities that I still have things to learn from other people. And so I like to ask probing questions about things. And it's led me to some really interesting relationships, to where some of the folks that we're working with are now not just leaders of organizations or groups that are unlikely allies for the work that I do, but are now, I consider them to be, you know, not more than acquaintances and friends and people that I actually care fondly for.
There are a lot of, you know, common things that we espouse in Braver Angels and the organization, with the curiosity and being willing to listen to other people. You know, I wonder about, and Ryan, in terms of the part of your story that brought you to this particular organization. So maybe if you could tell us that as well.
Yes. So I started off as, well, had my undergrad at the University of Texas at Tyler in speech communication. So obviously speaking and listening are part of my training. And then I did also always dabble in politics. I was part of the Young Republicans in Texas, part of the Young Republicans here in Arkansas as well. And, you know, very team-minded, the us versus them kind of thing, definitely. You know, the other side is always someone to be defeated, right, in those kind of mentalities. And so was doing that for a while. And even during that time, when I was back in Arkansas, I was a county Republican chair for a while. And one of the things that I just noticed is that, man, I've got lots of friends that are good people, think differently than I. And, you know, we don't have to be combative about the way that we approach things all the time. And I got to feeling maybe a little burned out on politics, period. And that somewhat was informed by On the Tranquility of the Mind by Lucius Annaeus Seneca. And he's talking to a young man named Serenus, and Serenus saying, I'm really dissatisfied about life. You know, I feel compelled to go and act this way, but I know that this is the way that's going to, if I act this way, it's going to lead me to greater tranquility of the mind. And Seneca gives him some advice. He says, go try to do as much good as you can in your private life. You know, try to make an impact in some. So I took some time out of politics to go and try to do things in a different way for me. So took a sabbatical from political engagement. And during that time, I worked for the nonprofit, the American Red Cross here in Arkansas for a while. I then wanted a change, and I got involved in government. I worked for the Secretary of State, Mark Martin, former Secretary of State here in Arkansas, and moved up and kept trying to prove myself there. But then that wasn't quite the fit for me, working as kind of a bureaucrat or within that. Saw the job come open for Americans for Prosperity. And my first reaction to it when I read it was like, man, I think this is something I could do, but man, I really need to decide whether I want to get back into the political fights again. And I thought, well, you know, I'll get back in it and let's see if it's a fit. What I was pleased to find out is that there was a major pivot that had happened during that time of me coming on that was really more in line with Frederick Douglass's quote that we actually have as a mantra, basically, at Americans for Prosperity: work with anyone to do good and no one to do harm. And so it started a reframe that I came in at a really good juncture that fit my personality, fit my lived experience, and gave me the resources to actually lean into what Charles Koch truly believes, which is that people are the best at solving their own problems, and we need to remove barriers that keep them from achieving their full potential. And while doing this, we want to create a society of mutual benefit where people succeed by helping other people. And so that really resonated with me, because people were not enemies to me anymore. We're talking about barriers that are created by systems. And so it's people versus systems. And we can all find common ground normally when we talk like that. I find it fascinating to me that when you have current event kind of conversations around, let's say, critical race theory, which is that there has been inculcated in American laws disadvantages to other people. You have some that say, I'm not listening to that at all, but then we'll turn around and say the government's trying to keep us down. The government's trying to enact laws to keep us from being able to do these things. I'm like, you guys are speaking on the exact same problem. You have such a level of agreement that you can't see each other for the allies that you actually are. So part of what I attempt to do is to actually point that out and try to decrease the otherization that we see in politics and find that collaborative ground. So that's why I'm really happy to be where I'm at right now. And again, every day I'm trying to find the peace.
So many things there. So many things. The quote that you mentioned was work with anyone to do good. And then there was a second part of that quote. Would you say that again?
And no one to do harm. And that's a Frederick Douglass quote.
Okay. Work with anyone to do good and no one to do harm. Wow. That's really powerful. So I'd love to hear about an example of something that you've done where in Arkansas in particular with the organization that shows the power of that quote.
Yes. Okay. So for example, back in, now it's 2020, when you had the murder of George Floyd, there was a lot of angst and anger and outcry in the nation, and then even here in Arkansas. And I saw this again as an opportunity potentially to bring people together. And what I did is I had called a close friend of mine, Kevin Hunt, who... What's so cool about Kevin is Kevin has arrived at the same conclusions I have, but he's done it through completely different political, coming from the totally opposite political spectrum than I have. But we've arrived at the same point in time to where I'll count him not just as a friend, but a brother in the work that we're all trying to do for the state and bringing people together and solve our big problems. Called Kevin. And Kevin's an African-American. He's part of a director with the Arkansas Black Mayor's Association. I said, man, I'm upset about this. Other people are upset about this. But how do we turn this into a moment where we actually advance something that improves the quality of life and we're not revisiting this again when the next tragedy happens? Because I've seen this since Rodney King. You know, my memory goes back that far to the Rodney King era, where can't we all get along and No, we couldn't. And then we've had other issues happen around race and policing, particularly in these instances throughout that time frame. And I was like, do we pull a panel together? Do we have a discussion in the communities? He's like, man, we've done all that. We've done all that. And I said, okay, let's try something a little different, see what happens. So what we did is he worked his relationships on the left. I worked my relationships on the right. We pulled together African-American community leaders into what we called the Conference on Policy that Advances Equality. And the focus of this group was to put as much policy on the board as possible that we thought would, one, improve the quality of life of the African-American community. It had to be something that was not just nominal and we could pat ourselves on the back and give ourselves political points because it sounded good as a bill title. That happens. That's not what I'm interested in. The second part was it had to be a solution from the African-American, that it wasn't a prescription. It was a request. And I have a friend who works with Dream Corps Cut 50, Miss Ruby Welch, who often says nothing about us without us. And so that's what I really leaned into on that. The third part is that the policies that we synthesized down to or distilled down to have the potential for bipartisan passage. And so we came up with four bills. And we had two of those bills actually pass. And they were actually fairly substantive. We were very proud of them. The bills, before we had the bills filed, though, I spoke with Republican leadership because they are the majority, the supermajority here in the state of Arkansas. And Representative Austin McCollum, who was then the leader of the House Republican Caucus, gave our group 30 minutes of their time to present the bills and why they were important to the community of the African-American community. And they were very well received. They received a standing ovation for what they presented, because up there were Republicans and Democrats and independents and those that don't consider themselves anything. And they all heard this different perspectives, but highlighting the same problem. So there wasn't anything to argue over. Everybody from the community agreed on it. And I had Republicans call me after saying, you know, I'm often said there's inequality in our legal system, but today you actually pointed out one to me that I see and it makes complete sense. And that particular one was about record sealing. And once you've completed your time and your crime and you paid your fines, fees, and restitutions, after a certain period, if it's a nonviolent, non-sexual crime, you can have your record sealed. But there were a couple of caveats. One had to do with an arbitrary date and everything before that couldn't be sealed. Same crime could be done on two different dates. One would get sealed, one would not. The other was, did you go to prison for the crime versus the community corrections, the short term or the parole probation side of it. And so same crime, one person goes here, the other person goes there, couldn't get it resolved. And the majority of those that were being affected by the time and the ADC caveats were African Americans. So when we presented that bill, once it was filed by Representative Justin Boyd and Senator Bob Ballinger, it passed 92-3 in the House out of 100 and unanimously in the Senate. And that we saw as being huge. And it affected 60,000 Arkansans who had previous criminal records that could now be sealed. And that was in the testimony of the prosecutors. And we worked with prosecutors on that. And we worked with, you know, we brought these voices of the community, not just to talk to AFP, but AFP brings them to talk to their representatives and to their state leaders, because we're not about hoarding the microphones or having everyone pivot around us. It's about elevating those voices that don't normally get elevated. And so that was one. The other was a direct direct piece of legislation came directly from the George Floyd incident, which was now in the state of Arkansas. There is a mandatory training for duty to intervene for all 11,000 plus officers in the state of Arkansas every year. Every year they have to be told that no matter what your level in law enforcement, if you see another officer that is violating the constitutional rights of someone else that's using excessive force, you have a duty to stop them, and the people of Arkansas have your back on that. And we worked with leadership, Public Safety Secretary Jamie Cook and the heads of the Chief Association and the Sheriff's Association all worked together with us in this group to arrive at something that actually solves for some of the issue, but was totally agreeable to everyone. And so that bill, House Bill 1865, was 94-0 in the House and 34-0 in the Senate. So what I think this highlights is that if we approach building broad-based policy coalitions around these issues that are of major importance, that the opposition to them evaporates away because we're all coming to agreements. And I was very proud of both of those bills that this organization that we just put together was able to create. And we were keeping that organization going and moving forward on and looking towards 2023.
So many things that are wonderful there. The broad-based coalition building that you were talking about. It takes time to do that. This is not an easy thing to do. And building relationships across the divide, very important. I better give Glenn some time to ask some questions here too.
Sure. Well, I'll just comment a thing or two first, Ryan, is that I heard in that last story something that mirrors very much what we do in Braver Angels, which is we try to find common ground because we believe in many cases it's there, maybe not always. But if you sit down and talk in a respectful manner with people from the other side, often you find there's more agreement than you might have expected. And so that's how things get done. And I mean, what you described there is a great example of how that happened. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. The other thought, the other reaction I had to what you were saying early on, you talked about the notion of going out and doing good in your personal life. And that was in contrast to what kind of your, I forget how you say it, but it's basically your first instinct is something other than going out and doing good oftentimes. And I think that's true for all of us. The things that I've learned about, there's this tendency, this knee-jerk tendency for every one of us, all human beings, to respond emotionally to things, particularly when we start hearing something different than what we're used to or that we don't agree with. That's where tribalism comes from. And so when that happens, you can go to a bad place when you're letting emotions rule what you do and what decisions you make. So I liked what that quote was because it basically said, you know, when you first get this emotional reaction, don't go there. Instead, use your values, kind of your higher level brain, to dictate what you wind up doing. So I loved hearing that too. So you gave us some good examples. I wonder, do you have any other things in mind that you've done or that you can see that we could do to work across political differences that would help us in our country?
Yes. You know, when it comes to working across the political differences, the one thing that we need to understand is that, the way I see it, that politics was designed as an alternative to conflict. It was really the design for a collaborative. We all, at some point, were tired of killing and stealing from each other, and so politics was created. Now, what we have done is we have now made that a conflict area as well, and character assassination happens, and you can have one soundbite out of context, and someone will take that, knowing it's out of context today, and they will attempt to extrapolate out to the worst possible extent of that thought what that person may intend or mean. There's no assumption of goodwill among people in politics at the moment. It's always, you know, what's in it for me, or how does it harm my opponent, and keep, you know, that kind of way. So in working across the political differences, I think that we need to start having these assumptions of good intent, or at least as Arthur Brooks and Simon Sinek, I was watching a video of theirs, and they talked about how contempt is a habit and that we have to break that habit. Mm-hmm. And so there's some interesting things that have come out of that for me as I started trying to figure out my role, and my role is to actually expand our, you know, what we're able to try to impact in our communities as Americans for Prosperity and be a resource for other people. And I can't build if I'm always in a space of tearing other people down or other people's ideas down. And so this has led me to some other interesting things. So for example, here's one that it did cost me a little bit politically to make this to live up to this principle or to these principles that we have at Americans for Prosperity. And one of those is in the area of affordable housing, and Arkansas being one of the last state that doesn't have, say, a renter's rights or warranty of habitabilities. Now that is seen as a, you know, private property kind of issue, and I see that argument. However, I also see that about a decade ago, when this issue came up, that landlords went to government and said, these are the rights that we want under government, and they froze out anything that the tenant could have. And so we see this as unequal under the law, you know, that there's this inequality where someone could be evicted from their home and still have to abide by that contract if the, you know, and, or the house could be falling around them, falling apart, and they have no recourse. They could be, you know, I can't live here, but still would be obliged to pay, you know, by that contract. And then they could receive a criminal penalty, a criminal eviction. And we don't think that that's right. That should be a civil issue, you know. So we're looking at this in terms of human dignity. We're looking at this in terms of, those that have power versus those that don't. Is there equality under the law? Did somebody put their thumb on the scale a little bit on this issue? And it cost us a little bit. I had conversations. I had people who had done business with me for a long time coming up going, I can't believe that this is a private property issue. I'm like, well, you've made it a commodity on the public market. So, you know, we have lemon laws too here in Arkansas. So whereas we didn't get, we joined in a coalition. We didn't lead this. What happened is in some previous work, I had met some folks who are unlikely allies. And one of the things I asked, I said, look, thank you for coming and working with me on this issue I care about. Do you have an issue that you care about that you can make me care about? And so this bubbled up as the top tier issue. And I stayed open-minded to why this was such a concern for them. And then I found the principles, not found as in like, you know, oh, if you don't, it's like, I think it was Groucho Marx said, if you don't like my principles, don't worry, I've got others. Not that. It's that I had to sit back because I hadn't considered this issue, evaluate it by our principles, and say, oh, wow, there is actually a juncture here in which we can find common ground. And so I leaned into that. And this ended up with us being part of the coalition for Arkansans for Stronger Communities. And with Arkansans for Stronger Communities, you go to their website and look at those that are listed. There's Americans for Prosperity there in the middle. And we're surrounded by the Democratic Socialists of America, by Indivisible, by, you know, our friends over at Arkansas Community Organizations. You know, we are definitely the odd person out in that group, but it's because on this issue of affordability, we have thoughts about regulations, about local exclusionary zoning practices that keep us from being able to build the inventory of houses that would be habitable and helpful to solving the affordable housing issue. So that's one of those areas to where I did take heat. I ain't gonna lie, it's not comfortable being the person who's trying to pull together on principle these groups so we can actually solve problems. But now we did get a bill passed. Senate Bill 594 was passed. This was Senator Jonathan Dismain and Representative Spencer Hawks. And this allows the tenants to move out of a house that's not structurally sound with no penalty to their contracts. And then this also eliminated unlawful detainer evictions, which required, before there could be a hearing, the tenant had to continue to pay their rent into a managed a fund of the court before they could have it heard whether they had cause or not. So now those two things have taken place. I like to think that part of that had to do with AFP leaning in and helping. We didn't, again, we weren't the most knowledgeable on the topic, but we were aligned with those that were, and we lent our voice to their concern so that hopefully those that see us as a center-right organization that they know about, that they'd be open to what the problems really are. I think that goes back to this idea of what can we do? You may not like the solutions on the outset, but don't discount that there's a real problem that someone's trying to solve. And I think we never get to that. We never get to that point.
Glenn, this has been an amazing conversation so far that we've been having with Ryan Norris, who is with Americans for Prosperity in Arkansas. And I just want to keep hearing from him. So I think we have a second part to this interview that we do in the future. So let's go ahead and tie up this part of the interview. And I just want to give thanks to our listeners for joining us for this edition of On the Other Hand. And we hope you've enjoyed today's discussion, this first part of this discussion with Ryan Norris of Americans for Prosperity in Arkansas. Be sure to check out this and the second part of this episode, On the Other Hand, on the Braver Angels Arkansas website at arkansas.braverangels.org. And there you're going to be able to find details about other things related to Braver Angels, including upcoming workshops and public programs and other events.
Yeah, and we'd also like to hear from our listeners any feedback that you might have about our program, maybe any suggestions for improvement, ideas for speakers or topics, or just whatever you want to share with us. All you got to do is just go to that same website page that April mentioned, arkansas.braverangels.org, and you can email us using the link that we provide there. On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band. Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, April Chatham Carpenter.
And Glenn White.
Have a great evening, and let's all work to bring our community closer together.